We got a big Monday nighter tonight. Bills at home against the Patriots. The wind, it looks extreme online. Like, we're seeing weather reports of ESPN doing shots, like their panel on the field, and these guys are just trying to stay on their chairs. Probably some embellishment, I would think, but sheets are flying around, goalposts are moving, the flags are waving. It's going nuts down there. And we got a guy on the line who's familiar with playing in Buffalo. Spent a lot of time there from FS1, longtime NFLer. Here's our buddy Marcellus Wiley. With the wind potentially being such a factor tonight, Marcellus, does that make you lean one way or the other? Does it favor the Bills, the Patriots, or does it not matter?
Oh, man, this matchup right here, I don't think it will matter because you drafted Josh Allen, the big strong football, to cut through those conditions and cut through that wind. But just by the play calling and by the structure of the offense from New England, they play it very close to the vest. Despite Mac Jones having a lot of passing attempts and completions, over 20-plus yards, they know how to go out there and play methodically and play close to the best football, play it very efficiently. So just because of the styles and the matchup of styles, I think it's going to be a draw in terms of these conditions. But then it's going to come down to what other factors come into play. Which defense shows up, and we know consistently it's been New England this year, more so than even Buffalo, who may still be a stronger defense on paper. But then...
Okay, let's throw him on hold. It got cracking there right off the bat, man. I'm not sure Marcellus is going to make this one. It sounds like he's in Buffalo trying to grind through the weather.
He's sitting beside Susie Culber outside.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So we'll call him back. We'll see if we can get him back. But, yeah, I mean, this is pressure for Josh Allen, pressure for the Bills. I've been saying it all day. I think it's almost 100% pressure on them. But the way Belichick operates, he won't let his team off the hook. He's not going to let his team think that they don't have pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, they're fighting for respect. They're fighting for first overall in the AFC East. Top seed in the AFC is up for grabs. I think we got Marcellus back. And you're just talking about these two quarterbacks and the offense and the structure. And what do you think the message is from Belichick here in terms of what maybe the Patriots can prove with a win tonight in Buffalo?
Yeah, sorry, guys. The conditions, I guess, in Buffalo affected me here in L.A. as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what's going on. Either that or I need to pay my cell phone bill earlier. But the point is, I think for the New England Patriots, this is just for them to return to who they were in terms of the psyche, in terms of the dominance in that division. They had that one-year hiatus where Buffalo was able to establish their dominance. But it's interesting, the statistic about the Buffalo Bills having beaten the Patriots three straight times since 1999-2000. And headline news, that's when I was a Buffalo Bills. That was a long time ago. So in terms of the Patriots establishing dominance, it's well documented. But for the Buffalo Bills, for them to have a continued dominance of greatness against the New England Patriots, we haven't seen that over two decades. So I think it's one of those mental chess matches where, hey, it's not just about the score. It's not just about the performance. But, hey, let's remind you who we are. And that's going to pay dividends for both squads, especially for the Patriots.
Marcellus, you born and raised in L.A.?
Yes, sir.
What was your reaction your first time showing up? I don't even know when it was, college or high school. When you showed up in the conditions like Buffalo, were you like, what the hell is this? Or just what's the general reaction from somebody that's from an area where you never see it?
Yeah, you know, the first time is actually just pure excitement. You just see it on television, Christmas specials, whatever it may be in the movies, and you're like, wow, just something different. So when I first experienced it, it was in college when I went to New York, and I remember landing off the plane and immediately just in a T-shirt and shorts and just running around in 30-some degrees loving life. And then that quickly turned upside down as I started to get used to the snow and used to the cold. And you realize, ah, man, this is cold. But the first time, you're just there, pure joy, maybe pure adrenaline. You're just excited. But as a player, it was funny being on the Buffalo Bills and watching teams struggle when they came to Buffalo. And I remember talking to, you know, players on the other team and your boys on the other squad. You're like, dude, I'm not used to this either. It's cold to me, too. But as a collective, I think that we were able to handle it better than our opponents just because we had to go through the practice week and we had to go through those rigors week in and week out, especially when it got cold December time. But I don't really think there's a performance advantage. I think it's just whoever can get acclimated mentally the fastest is the one who has the psychological edge.
with Marcellus Wiley. What did you make of John Harbaugh and the Ravens going for two at the end of the game in Pittsburgh yesterday?
Like Mike Thomas said, it was predictable, obvious, and I think it was the right decision, but obviously not the right result. In that moment, they just had the right play call, and more importantly, just the right performer out there in T.J. Watt, and you saw it. Like, that affected the throw. That was one of those throws that you're not supposed to lead the man. You're supposed to stick it to the man, and Mark Andrews running a flare route. It's interesting, if you really break the play down in slow motion and look at it mentally, you start to realize what broke down. It was the fact that there was pressure right in the face of Lamar Jackson. He had to throw a sidearm. But more importantly, he threw a sidearm to a tight end. That's not a running back. That's not a wide receiver. As great as Andrews is, if you watch him flip his hips as he turns his head around to look for the pass, you can watch him slow down in those moments, in those motions, because no matter how athletic a tight end is, he's still a big dude, and he slows down at a rapid rate compared to other fast guys. And when that calculation got off course because there was pressure in the face of Lamar Jackson, he just let him, when really that's just where you're supposed to throw the ball to anybody else who's fast in that moment. But it was a tight end who turned around and looked, and you can see him just take two, maybe three steps, a little slower than the pace that was expected. So it's a game of inches, man, and it's also just a game of little milliseconds and micro moments. And it's unfortunate because I was excited. I thought they had won that game, and boy, did I have some egg on my face soon after.
Marcellus, all the NFL shows, all the pundits, they're talking about who's the real deal, like Green Bay, Kansas City, Tampa Bay pops up. Arizona is 10-2. Do you think they get enough love? Are they for real? What kind of damage they can do? Or are they just a team that has a good record and somebody disposes of them quickly in the playoffs?
Man, I think everything you said is true, and that's the problem. Are they real? Yes. Are they getting enough respect? Yes. And that respect, you got to think about it, is appropriate because it's a team that we're not going to gloat over just because we haven't seen them together in the playoffs. So whatever we're saying in terms of they're not getting the full amount of attention, I think is appropriate. Like, there's still a huge question mark. Cliff Kingsbury in the playoffs in the NFL, no one knows. Kyler Murray in the playoffs, no one knows. That relationship and how it's going to play out when they hit some rocky roads and some moments in the playoffs. Every team faces it. The playoffs is different than the regular season because in the playoffs, you make a team play according to their plan B. And what's the plan B for the Cardinals if they face that adversity? I think that big unknown is why you just don't see everyone lauding over this team. Even though we know that they're real, we know that they're good, it's just a different season. Preseason's different than regular season. Regular season's different than the postseason. So until we can see this team really be measured against the best when it matters most, I think there's always going to be a little reservation.
So I feel like we bring up Detroit way too often, considering they never win. They're so irrelevant. They have been irrelevant for
so long.
They're
hot. They're hot.
They're on a streak, though, now, right? They got a tie a few weeks ago. They got a win. And listen, full credit to Dan Campbell, Jared Goff, everyone on that team, everyone in that town. Reason to celebrate. You got yourself a win. You avoid going winless. And I guess that means something. But it says more about their reputation and how they are perceived league-wide. When the team that loses to them, immediately everyone's like, the coach has got to be fired, the GM's got to be fired, the quarterback needs to be left in the corner and not on the flight home. Like, many, I know a few Vikings fans, they are going postal. They are going nuts, and I can't really argue with them, Marcellus. I mean, you can't lose to Detroit and be considered a legit contender, and that's the Vikings proved who they were yesterday.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, the Vikings have been an interesting roller coaster ride for them. We all know the talent level, but we've seen the injuries and we've seen some great performances and not so great. But people got to remind themselves and keep in perspective, it's a game of inches. And that said, there were, what, 5 one-score defeats for the Detroit Lions. And in 2 other games, you saw them close. They gave Baltimore all they can handle. And you talk about a Pittsburgh game and you tie, like, you got to remember that I tell people all the time in the NFL because it's interesting. It's nothing but the all-star game of the all-stars. So everyone in the NFL is a black belt. It's just different degrees of that black belt. So when you see a football team, Detroit Lions, people forget there may be a Hall of Famer on there, a few Pro Bowlers, a couple All Pros, and a bunch of All-Americans from college. Like, they're not sorry. And I remember when I left Columbia and I got to the NFL and I'm in Buffalo in the locker room and talking to all the guys. They're like, man, you made it from the Ivy League. You made it from Columbia. I know you had like 5 sacks a game. And I reminded them, like, no, actually, those guys put up a fight as well. And it's the same thing when you talk about a team with a bad collective record. Remind yourself of those individuals. They're going to put up a fight. So even if you win that fight, you're going to know that you've been in the battle, and you're going to know you've been scratched and nicked up.
There's some suffering for the Vikings fans, Marcellus, and there is suffering for Giants fans. I mean, where do you go from firing your offensive coordinator to follow that up with putting up a 9 spot against the Dolphins? Like, what do you do as an organization to, like, just to move forward? I think we all know the answer, but do they pull the trigger on it?
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks in New York, whether it's, you know, the coaching situation. Some still have their doubts, obviously, at the quarterback position. Because of performance and injury, you have your question marks. And then, more importantly, just to stabilize the ship. And then you look at a situation where you start to fire guys. Like, coaches know that that's a predictable move to save themselves and to give themselves a mulligan or at least some cushion while they figure things out. So all of this is going on schedule in terms of when a team is really struggling, the moves that they make to give themselves runway and to give themselves opportunity to right the ship. Oh, man, it's a struggle fest out there. It's funny. Detroit has the worst record, but of all the lowly teams, might be in the best situation outside of Jacksonville because they have a coach and they obviously have a franchise quarterback. But, man, you can look at the New York Giants situation. You look at the New York Jets situation. You can look at a bunch of places and you're like, I'd rather be Detroit. That's at least a scrappy bunch, a fiery bunch. They have talent. They play hard for their coach. And it seems like they're glued together. So it's going to be interesting how it all plays out.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the Giants, but on the flip side of that is Miami, and all of a sudden, and now their schedule has not been good. They play the Giants, the Jets, they play the Texans, but they beat the Ravens, beat the Panthers. They've won 5 in a row, and Tua looks pretty good. Like, Tua looks good, and I don't know how you react if you're in Miami because it was such a tire fire to start, but Brian Flores, I think he's a pretty good coach. Awful first 6-7 weeks, but
and he's
backed them
all year whenever asked about it. Hayes.
And always back to it, and you kind of have to, don't you, Marcellus? I mean, they drafted him a year ago. It's not like this guy's been in the league for 5 or 6 years. You got to give Tua some runway.
Definitely. I think that the jury is out on Tua for some strange reason. I don't think he's been given a fair deal in terms of coming off a major injury his rookie year. Still going out there going 6-3 in that same rookie year. Tons of question marks, basically on the trading block, all but said and gone until the midnight hour. And then finally you say, oh, you know what? You are our future. You are our franchise quarterback. But was that really out of reluctance? Was that really out of default? Or was that really your true desires? And you look at it, he wasn't voted captain. So there's a lot of conversation about Tua the player and Tua the leader. But he's been able to right the ship, and more importantly, so is Brian Flores, who I don't think there are question marks about. It's just about how consistent can he be in getting his bunch ready to play, because I think he's a damn good coach. All that adds up to a situation where now you look, you're like Miami, when you keep Tua in his comfort zone, when you just unroll slowly the playbook for him instead of saying, hey, here are all the chapters, here are all the volumes, just play at will. I think you can see a much more efficient team and much more efficient and valuable Tua. So I think Miami is going to stay pat. They're going to go with Tua next year. And it'd be interesting to see an offseason committed to Tua, not trade rumors, not issues, not conversation about how he's inadequate, but real support to see how far it takes.
Sticking in Florida, we'll get you out of here on a gratuitous Tom Brady question, because he is leading the league in passing yards and touchdowns. He's thrown 35 touchdowns this season. I got to believe he's the MVP if it gets handed out today, and they're going to be in a battle, not so much in the division, but chasing that top seed in the NFC. I don't think he's going to take his foot off the gas. I think what will be intriguing is what happens with Antonio Brown in 3 weeks, because a lot of people are suggesting that Bruce Arians just should have cut him immediately. Should have cut him immediately, and I think it's pretty clear why he didn't, because he's got to run it past Tom. And I think the way Tom's playing right now, I would expect Tom wins that battle. Who do you think will win it if it comes down to it? Arians wants to cut Brown. Brady wants to keep him. What happens with Antonio Brown?
Oh, he stays. He's proven that he's valuable. Yeah, he proved that he was valuable last year in the Super Bowl. What was those 3 touchdown passes were to Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski, one who was retired and one who had found himself out the favor of the NFL but then came back and proved his value. When people say that, oh, man, they make these absolute statements, oh, we're going to get rid of you. You're on the zero tolerance policy. They're talking to you if you're playing average. They're talking to you if you are staying as advertised. When as soon as you increase that value and as soon as you change our perception one way, we change our perception the other way. So now all of a sudden you start to have more than 3 strikes. You get 4 strikes. You get 5 strikes. You get foul balls. You just stay at the plate. You dig yourself out of this because you're able to show that you have value. Like, you could go get a choir boy if you want, but can he catch touchdowns? Can he get open? So I think that Bruce Arians made that statement expecting one level of Antonio Brown, and Antonio Brown changed the reality and perception of that expectation. Now you just got to be quiet and sit on your sword and basically act like Tom Brady forced you to do it. When in reality, I think it's just the performance of Antonio Brown forced everyone to say, come back.
Great stuff, buddy. As always, it's going to be a fun ball game tonight. Enjoy it. We'll do it again next week.
All right, brothers, take care. This is going to be fun. Let's do it.
Can't wait for it. Marcellus Wiley of FS1, longtime NFLer, former Buffalo Bill. And, yeah, Tom Brady, 35 touchdowns, leading the league in passing yards. And I think if the MVP gets handed out tonight, he wins it. And I think, you know, what's he got, 4 more games to go? There's no reason to believe he's going to slow down.
I think if it was like, because it's Tom Brady, I think people tend to look elsewhere, want to find something different. Like, if that was Herbert that was having, it would be like slam dunk. It's like, this is his year, nobody's touching him.
Right.
Or a guy like Russ, or I don't know.
Even Josh Allen or whoever, yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy G, it's like, this guy's the MVP, but it's like, when it's Brady, it's like, man, maybe we'll sniff around and find something else. We want to look elsewhere. Like, hands down, they'd be talking about it. This is his to lose, for sure.
No, I agree with you, and I would suggest it should be the complete opposite because of his age. At 44, he should get the benefit of the doubt. Ty should go to Brady, but it will be the opposite. Ty will go to fresh blood, someone new. But at 44, forget Ty. Within the ballpark should go to Brady at 44 years old. Because it's just remarkable. This guy wins a Super Bowl, a Super Bowl MVP, and now this year probably going to follow it up with an MVP or certainly be in contention and go back to the playoffs and at least at a minimum host a playoff game, possibly end up with the top seed, although Arizona doesn't appear to be slowing down. But it's incredible what he's doing. And, you know, they've had injuries. Gronk has been out for significant portions of the season. Antonio Brown's been hurt. They've established a run game. Run game's been very quality for them as well. They're a well-oiled machine offensively down in Tampa.
Did you catch Marcellus, his Shaq reference?
No. What did he say?
Back in the day, Shaq called Sacramento in the playoffs. Instead of calling him the Sacramento Kings, he called them the Sacramento Queens.
Right.
So the coach of Arizona, Cliffy Kingsbury, he called him Cliffy Queensberry.
Oh, okay. I did not pick up on that reference.
Yeah, he was like, the coach in the playoffs is Cliff Queensberry. And I was like, that didn't sound weird to me. I'm like, that's a Shaq reference.
That's Shaq. That's right.
Because Shaq called the Sacramento Kings the Sacramento Queens. So he called the head coach Cliffy Queensberry.
Well, let's see if that's the case come playoff time, because Arizona's going. They're going. And they might be the top seed. They're really good. And they got Kyler Murray back and DeAndre Hopkins. And
they were winning without him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they beat Seattle without him. Look at Seattle. They stopped the bleeding, right? They beat San Francisco yesterday, back in the winning circle. It doesn't matter. They're not going to get back into contention. No. But, yeah, I don't know. This is the NFL in a nutshell. Detroit gets a win. Who knows what to expect out of the game tonight? We're week 13. We got a bunch of more games still to be played, and the playoffs are a month away. So it's go time, man. It's time to put your foot down and start to gear up if you want to be considered a legitimate playoff team and Super Bowl contender. And I think that certainly applies tonight in Buffalo.
I was watching Pitt, and I think that, like, Pitt-Baltimore, it's like this cold weather division and always kind of low scoring, and it's like, I remember that as a kid. You're watching football at this time, and it's like the cold and not much going on. I would rather Brady down in Florida, like high-flying offense. I don't like that cold, grinded out. And I know the purist would say, I love every second of it, but no.
I like a mixture. I like a combination of both. That's what I think makes the NFL so great, is that you get a combination of both based on the weather status throughout the United States, where you could get a game in Miami tonight where it would feel like 28 and they'd be out cruising, or an indoor game, or it could be a game in Buffalo where it's going to be outrageous. And I like the fact that it's a combination and the elements change it up, right? It's like a TV show. You can't have the same script. You want it to be a little bit different. Not all the time. And I understand what you're saying specifically with like a Super Bowl. You want it on turf or in LA and somewhat of a controlled environment. But I think tonight will be fun. I think it'll be nasty. Belichick will be out there. He'll have a hoodie on the whole night. He'll look miserable. Yeah, it'll be great.